To everyone in London, Emma Cooper has the world at her feet. Against all odds, she has landed a Wall Street job, is being fast-tracked by the high-flying Brad, and is living the high life in Manhattan. And it's only a question of time before gorgeous Dr. Anthony returns from Africa and pops the question. Emma is not going to ruin their illusion. And that's the blurb on the novel by Astrid Fleming called White Nights. She's in studio. Good afternoon and welcome to SAFM Literature.
Thank you so much. Lovely to be here.
Now, first of all, what prompted you move from investment banker to novelist?
You know, I've always loved writing and it's always been my hugest passion. So my whole life I wrote. It was a way for me to sort out the chaos of my life. But it's also always been the thing that I thought I did the best. So after I spent my 20s basically gallivanting around the world and living in London and New York and doing all sorts of exciting things. But my big dream was always to write the book. And when I left New York, I had enough money saved, just enough to take some time off and write it. And so that's when I sat down and wrote the book.
Now, where is that where your similarities with the novel's protagonist Emma ends?
Probably. You know, I don't think you can write a book about living in New York unless you've lived there. And I don't think you can write a book about this wonderfully wicked, corrupt, you know, man's world that investment banking is unless you've been there, because you don't get to see behind the scenes. They're bits and pieces of experiences that I had, and there are definitely emotions in there which are mine, because you can't understand what it feels like to work five nights through the night, you know, leaving the office at 7 a.m, going to shower at the gym across the road, buying a shirt at J. Crew or Banana Republic, whichever was open earlier, and then going back to the office. You know, you can't write about that unless you've been there.
It's a crazy, crazy world. It sounds insane. Now, there's a great deal of play on the various meanings of white knights, you know, apart from the obvious knight in shining armor. What makes the various meanings of white knights work for this novel, in your opinion?
The novel is divided into three distinct parts, which would indicate the various phases of Emma's own journey and how, where she is. Mm. So you've obviously got the cliched white knights, which is your knight in shining armor. It's the guy who's going to come in and rescue you. There's also white knights without the K is typically used as a descriptor for those 24-hour days in very northern climes when the sun never sets in summer. Yes. And in investment banking, you work so hard. You work, as I said, right through the night. When I was there, I was leaving on average between midnight, 2 a.m. or 4 a.m. So you really are putting in the hours. So white knights is another descriptor. And then there's a third play on the word, which is a knight of the road, which is a slang term for a homeless man. And while Emma's working in this world of
this,
like,
this wonderful homeless man, the professor.
Yeah, the professor, exactly. And he's almost a foil. He's her conscience in a way. And he just keeps on reminding her that it's not like that, and it shouldn't be, your life shouldn't revolve around making so much money, and you should have morals. And he doesn't tell her, he asks her questions.
Yes.
And I think we've all in our lives had someone who has helped us at various points to just, like, pull the youngsters back on track and say, is that really what you think?
They have a very special relationship. Now, we're not going to blow the story for our readers, because we want people to go out and get the book. But I love the way that the professor gives her this book on the Buddha's life and how there's similarities between Emma's journey and the Buddha's own journey. You know, that quest for sensual attainment and for material attainment, and then of course, you know, the search for higher and a deeper meaning in life, and who he turns out to be at the end is just, it's fantastic. But I knew it was going there.
Then you're a clever reader.
I think 2/3 into the book, I was like, I have a feeling that there's a connection there somewhere. Now, the professions of medicine and investment banking oppose each other through the relationship between Emma and her childhood sweetheart. But why did you choose medicine as Anthony's journey, and medicine, you know, juxtaposed against investment banking?
I think that my father's a doctor, so I have an understanding of that world, and so is my brother, and so is my grandfather. But for me specifically, when I was in investment banking, the focus is so money orientated, and you have to put so much effort and time and hours into something which is really so facile at the end of the day. And if you look at young doctors and the amount of time that they need to put in and the hardships and the exposure to AIDS and the long operating hours and all that sort of stuff, and if you look at the rewards that they're getting out, that contrast for me was very stark, because in medicine you're saving lives, and in investment banking it's really more about
you're making money for rich people.
And it's all about the deal size and the bonus and what it says on your CV and all that sort of stuff. So for me, there was a difference in depth between the two careers, which was interesting to contrast.
Hectic. My guest in studio is investment banker turned author. I think that's a great title. Astrid Fleming, and her novel is called White Knights. We're also taking your calls on 0891 104207. You can SMS 34701. Now, Astrid, as is the case typically with love stories, broken hearts are the main subject matter. However, you also have broken bones and broken homes. What do you want to illustrate with that aspect of things that are broken in the story?
I think one of the key themes is taking responsibility for yourself. And for me, the book, it's quite interesting because I often find that when young we take an intake of grads into our company every year. And I find that often as a woman and a senior woman in the company, they come and ask me questions about how to handle issues, possibly what to wear, how to handle a situation with the client. And I find a lot of the time I'm answering questions in the same way that I would give Emma advice in terms of those sort of questions. It's how to become... how to enable yourself and how to think of a problem in order to get to the correct answer. Yes. And so broken homes and broken bones and the disconnected world in which she finds herself, for Emma, her journey is very similar to all of us in our 20s. How do you distill the question so that you can answer it correctly for yourself and get to the right place and not be bullied and not end up being nudged or... You know,
be carried along with the tide, you know, to
exactly
to a place where you end up not sure where your goal lies anymore.
Exactly, and for each of us, it's important. It's very individualistic, so that's where all those themes come together.
Well, up next, we're going to talk about the nature of relationships, working relationships amongst women, and how they explored in the novel White Knight. So stay tuned to SAFM, South Africa's news and information leader.
SAFM, South Africa's news and information leader.
Continuing our discussion with Astrid Fleming, author of the novel White Knights. Remember, we're taking your calls as well on 0891 104207. Now, Astrid, a female competition in the workplace is another subject that you tackle in this novel. Why do you think it continues to be bitter and tough? And, you know, what do you think it will take for relations to be less antagonistic among women in certain workplaces?
I think... in the investment banking world, it's so cutthroat because it's really all about money. So there's jostling to get onto the right deal, and there's a whole lot of competitiveness. But what's very interesting in White Knights is the comparison between Emma Cooper, who's really quite naive and young, and she's doing her best, and she's trying. Because she's naive, she doesn't see the politics. And her friend / foe, possibly friend, Kate, who... basically plays up to all the stereotypes. And so you've got the comparison of the girl who desperately wants to be taken seriously but doesn't know how to, and the one who knows very well how to be taken seriously but decides not to play that game. And it's interesting in that male-orientated world to see how they both end up. And there's a bit of a tale there, so I won't go any further.
And also, I mean, the jostling for attention from the MD and how the MD also plays in on that with the favoritism. I mean, it sounds like a crazy... You seem like such a nice person. What on earth were you doing in investment banking?
I was... It was such a challenge, and I think it was probably... I decided to seek my fortune and to try and play on the world stage, and I did. And then I decided that it wasn't for me. And so I went on to do lots of other exciting things.
That's wonderful. Now, this novel is, of course, set in Manhattan. What is it about New York that makes it continue to capture, you know, the imagination, especially for young people who want to go and take over the world?
I think it's a combination of things. It's the American dream. It's the fact that you can, anything can come true. And there are a couple of songs about how as you walk on the sidewalks on Manhattan, they glitter with gold, and they actually do, because the asphalt that they use in the sidewalks has got a slight glitter, and it's totally captivating. And if you look at what's going on in that city, from the nightclubs to the brunching spots to the shopping to the jazz bars to the art exhibitions to, you know, everything. It's just an entire city, a multi-layered city, from, you know, downtown where it's grungy and street cool to uptown where it's completely glam and Upper East Side. And the fact that you can play in all of those.
But then you also have the silent mass that is the situation of homeless people who are hungry, and they represent, you know, all areas of humanity.
You do. And I think that's one of the really tragic things about most big cities is that if you look at the numbers, there are so many homeless people and they just walk past every day. And so it was an interesting foil, because we don't take the time to find out who those people are, and we just walk past. And sometimes just a simple acknowledgement is all to make that person feel like a human being, rather than, you know, just someone who's looking at smart shoes walking past.
Yes. Now, you know, the 20s female, you know, in a traditionally male work environment, the quest for love and belonging, you know, add a dash of emotional insecurity, almost typifies the single working woman, I think, anywhere in the world. So what lessons do you think this story has for the single working girl who's just trying to find her way through life?
I think that in terms of the working girl, the lessons are quite valid. I think that men take their careers very seriously.
Yes.
You know, young guys who go in treat it seriously, and so should we.
Yes.
And I don't think you should lose your personality. I think that, you know, if you're in a black suit environment, of course you've got to wear your black suit, but don't lose your personality. Wear those colorful shoes or a fabulous handbag. Keep all of that, but make sure that you're professional and that people don't treat you like you're fluffy just because you're cool and fun and vibey, and that you do it all as seriously as the men, so that they take you as seriously.
But you also learn, you know, to maintain your integrity, though, because sometimes I don't think we need to stoop down to the levels that the boys' club sometimes stoops down to. Now, tell us how you managed to get a publishing deal, and, you know, did you use your hardball investment banking negotiation skills to put the book out? How did that process work?
Oh, it's such a lovely story. Basically, when I finished my novel, I sent the book out. I researched where it should go, to 20 different places, and you know, with 98% rejection rates, you've got to make sure it's going to someone who represents work like you and who has currently accepting new authors and who might like your stuff. And I was hoping that one person would write back and say, send us your full manuscript. I got 14 people who said, send it. So I was like, oh my goodness, this is fantastic. So I sent it off, and then they all slowly but surely declined me.
Yes.
So I kept getting these postcards in the post with a stamp on it saying, sorry, not for us. But of those declines, I got two full commentaries, which was amazing. One was from a 30-something gay guy in New York, and the other was from a 60-something a British woman in London. And they both said the same stuff, which was awesome. And so I knew I needed to change some stuff. And it was all about the craft of writing. So it was about the pacing of the story and the plot lines.
Yes.
And just making sure that, you know, it worked. So I did all the changes, and then I had run out of money at that stage. So I took a job and threw myself into building a .com here in Joburg. And then I fell madly in love with the guy that I ended up marrying. And so life sort of carried on, somersaulting. And my fabulous manuscript, which I had worked so hard and poured my life and soul and heart into, was sitting next to my laptop. And I got married a month ago. And it was a very small wedding, but it was very special, because I had people from every different phase of my life there. And so many of them had supported and cajoled, and they'd been shoulders to cry on when I was, you know, bashing my head against my laptop.
Yes.
And they kept me going. And I just wanted to give them a thank you, which was going to be appropriate and say how grateful I was. And so I decided to give them all a copy of my book. But I didn't want to give them a photocopied ring-bound copy, because
yes,
that wasn't doing it justice. So I had 6 weeks from the time I made the decision to my wedding, and it takes a month to print a book.
Yes.
So it was just this mad rush to get the book printed. And so I self-published. And it was crazy, and I treated it just like a startup, and I had to work out who all the people were that I needed, and I needed to contact them and see if they're available. And we've ended up with a book which has got a cover design by the most wonderful awarded cover designer. It's been laid out by a phenomenal guy who does a lot of professional layouts. It's,
yes,
you know, been printed in litho by guys in Maritzburg who do this for a living. I mean, so the product is actually amazing.
No, it's outstanding quality.
So, but it was really a thank you.
So does the book retail, you know, in New York, in London, in Johannesburg?
At the moment, it's in South Africa, which is wonderful.
Yes.
It's an exclusive in the Western Cape. It can be bought on Kalahari. It can be bought in Joburg from a wonderful shop called Abby and Ross in Parkwood. And it's slowly getting out.
That's wonderful.
So it's very exciting.
Well, congratulations on finding the love of your life, your white knight.
My white knight.
And congratulations on such a wonderful book. How much does it retail for?
$195.
And that's Astrid Fleming's White Knights, a novel about love and lust, deals and ideals. I think it's a wonderful holiday read if you're taking time off. And it's a great way to escape if you're in the middle of stuff. But it's also a smartly written, hilarious novel. So congratulations on a wonderful debut, and we hope to read more from you.
Thank you so much.
This is SAFM, South Africa's news and information leader.